listening to His Time. I'm Andy Bates. It is Monday, October 31st, Reformation Day. And since it's Monday morning, we get to check in with our friend, Dr. Bob Weiss. Good morning, Bob.
Hey, good morning to you and your listeners. Blessed Reformation Day. Yesterday in our church, before we all started, I talked for 10 minutes. And actually, they seemed pretty interested about Reformation, Martin Luther, some of the stuff that he wrote, and try and encourage them to at least look into table talks and a few other things. And then I shared with them this little bit of information because, you know, sometimes there's always a temptation to grind your axe on some of these things. And I did tell them that I don't know if your listeners are aware of this, but he wrote a very good, well, one of his lectures on Abraham, Hagar, and Sarah, and in for your listeners, if they're interested, and they can pull this off the internet, in volume 4 of Luther's works, he actually does address the issue of elective abortion. I don't know if you or any of your listeners are aware of that, but that certainly wasn't something that was ignored. Some people think it was one of these things that sort of happened from Roe v. Wade in 73, but of course, there's a long history of elective abortion. It goes way back, you know, during the Roman times and especially, you know, first century and before. Hmm. But he wrote a very interesting one of his lectures, which was sort of Latin, actually. And he talks about sort of a off-the-cuff translation here. What great wicked world we live in, how these women who kill and expel these tender fetuses. And that's a Latin term, of course, meaning offspring. Even though they are the work of God. And so, and he goes on and says other things, but he really goes into the whole issue of marriage. And down here at Tantara, at the Missouri District, that's what the whole conference is about. It's about marriage in these troubled times. And most of this is dealing with the concept or the story of homosexuality and same-sex attractions and marriages and so forth. So Dr. Matt Ruger, you may know him.
Mm-hmm.
He was asked sort of very quickly to substitute for another pastor who received a call. And so I'm going to respond to his paper a little bit. It's quite a good paper and get in maybe a little bit of the neo-Gnosticism, which is kind of complicated term, but basically it says the identity of the person is the same thing as the identity of the body. And you're sort of locked in a cage. You can do what you want. So we can change our identity because we don't like what it is. So it's Dr. David Adams is down here too to respond to an attorney. So we're ready to go here sometime today. And I do want to bring up at least one subject. And we haven't talked about this, but the journal Nature Neuroscience, the study of the brain and nervous system and so forth, they recently came out with an article about lying. And they talk about telling small lies tend to be associated. Now, this is studying hundreds of people and looking at their brain when they actually do lie, are always related to negative emotions, and they always encourage bigger lies. So it becomes a pathological situation. Of course, the one thing that they do not talk about in this article is the whole issue of what we would say from a biblical viewpoint is how confession and absolution and the reception of the Lord's Supper, as Luther calls it in the Large Catechism, soothing medicine for body and soul, can help those people who tend to be pathological liars. I've only run into this twice as a parish pastor, and to get a person into the church to worship and to be in Christ, yeah, it takes a long time, but clearly the Lord's Supper does give strength to a person that works on this. And so in these particular scenarios, the research has found that dishonesty increased over 60 times that they lied, and it became very self-serving. So I know for perhaps some of your listeners, what are we doing this far? But, lying is one of those things that we talk about white lies as if they're nothing, but a lie is a lie. And if you're not telling the truth, then you're telling a lie. So we want to try and at least let people know that these are some things that researchers are looking into, and I think it's our responsibility as Christians to carry it into the biblical narrative that, you know, I mean, look at Peter, how he lied, and then how the Lord brought him back. So,
such a timely topic with it being, what, November tomorrow.
And yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's certainly something that's, I think, on most people's radar is, how does lying affect us? How does it affect us culturally? How does it affect character? What does it mean for us as a nation, as a culture? Do little lies hurt? Are they even necessary? I think is a question some might ask in order to get onto the big things.
Well, yeah, the whole issue our viewpoint that you just brought up is that, this article talks about how one lie leads to another lie to another lie, and it's just basically the quote-unquote, they talk about the snowball effect and the Pinocchio effect. And I think most of our people, if you wanted to talk to children about lying, talk about Pinocchio. And because there is a newspaper in the political side of things, that when somebody's not telling the truth, on the Hill in Washington, D.C. or some other place, they give them so many Pinocchios. In other words, they're not telling the truth. And it's interesting that you mentioned how this impacts our culture, our character, and so forth. Rarely do you hear on television or through social media when it's obvious that some people are not telling the truth that we're well aware of, they never really tell, they say, that's a lie. And one has to understand in the church, if we're going to, quote unquote, personally accuse them, it is the responsibility to back up that statement. But there is the law, and the main purpose of the law, of course, is to point out sin, and it condemns us. And my experience just as a pastor is that that's exactly what happens when people are, quote unquote, caught in these little white lies. They tend to snowball into larger things. It is what goes around comes around. So I really appreciate your comment on how does this impact our culture? How does it impact our speaking in the public square? And how does it impact our character? Because all of those are connected.
And I think it's a question we'll continue to face. Do you foresee any pivotal moment in our culture that there might be a big shift? That I know no one can really, no human can tell the future, but I just wonder if there's going to be some major event that makes a big pivotal shift for us. I mean, when you look at how it seems that even this political year and the campaigning has seemed to spiral downward so quickly, I just wonder if there will ever be a desire to return to how we function is being more, having more integrity, more character. I remember early on in the debates, and only one person spoke about character in the debates earlier this year.
Yeah, there is. I think it's kind of, to me, a conglomeration of a lot of different events where our society is finally just becoming apathetic and throwing up their hands and saying, I've been trying to tell the truth, but nobody listens to me. So, okay, well, whatever. And so they get into this whatever syndrome over against telling the truth, over against the issue of integrity and how that impacts our character and how people see our character functioning in society. Dr. Joel Bierman, in his PhD thesis over at Concordia Seminary, talks about virtue ethics and the necessity of virtue and honesty and integrity in our character as Christians, and that this is something that needs to be discussed more frequently, because if they're starting to discuss this now, one of the biggest places they're starting to look at this, believe it or not, is Princeton University. Rather, be quite honest, very liberal. That's where Peter Singer is located. And he's, of course, the man who believes in euthanasia, assisted suicide, and all these other different things. And I think, what does honesty mean when I look into the mirror? And I have a way to talk about, is this an honest approach for me to take when I'm trying to help somebody, or do I quote unquote, lie about this and build myself up, as opposed to what the Lord says, loving your neighbor as yourself. So I think there are ways to get at this, but I don't think there's going to be one major event. I think it's already occurring in a lot of the areas of what it means to be human and how we address this in a very honest way, certainly biblically and socially.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned earlier that you are at a Missouri District, Pastors Conference, is that right?
That's correct.
Will you be speaking at the conference this year?
Yes, I'm responding to a paper by the Reverend Dr. Matt Ruger.
Oh, yes, you mentioned that earlier, yeah.
That's okay. Our memories are good. See, here we go. it's shorter, and I'm glad you recovered from your pneumonia. I didn't mention that, but I'm glad you're doing well with that.
Thanks.
It's just the paper is very basic, and it's a very good paper about we need to be dealing with this. He goes through a lot of the stuff that's in the scriptures relating to homosexual same-sex attraction. He prefers same-sex attraction to the phrase sexual orientation, because that's a term that, how do you define orientation? It doesn't mean that a person who's practicing homosexuality is actually sinning. It just means it's a softening term. So, you know, he says if you're attracted to somebody else, of course, that doesn't mean you're sinning, but there's a difference between temptation and sin. And frequently I find in Bible classes, people are not getting that. They think if I'm tempted, I'm sinning. But Jesus, of course, was tempted for 40 days and 40 nights and did not sin. So he brings that whole issue out. And then my intention is to maybe make a statement or two. I have only 20 minutes to respond to this. And then there's a panel discussion on this topic, is to get into this whole issue of people who move from into this homosexual same-sex attraction basically are fleeing creation. We are male and female, period. We are embodied persons. And that is the truth, and we have to, I think, continue to be better teachers in what it means to be human within this context.
It always comes back to that question, doesn't it? What does it mean to be human?
We've talked about it a lot, but I agree with you. Your listeners and you and I and other people, it is to go back to the basics, go back to the catechism, and I would encourage people, especially the large catechism, where Luther speaks very well on creation on the first article.
What does it mean to be human? A question we will continue to try to answer each week here on His Time. And we do that on Faith and Family, too, when we look at ethical issues as well. Well, I pray that the conference goes well, that it's a blessed time for you and the pastors of the Missouri District as you gather together to study and have that mutual consolation, all those good discussions, that networking, that fellowship time there, as well as iron sharpens iron. I pray it's a good time for you and all the pastors.
Well, and thank you very much, and God's peace to you, and I'm glad you're doing well and feeling better.
Well, thanks, Pastor. God's blessings, and have a safe trip back.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Talk to you next week. Coming up in just a little bit, our study of the daily lectionary. Today, we're going to head down to Clarksville, Tennessee. We'll study with Pastor Larry Peters of Grace Lutheran Church in Clarksville. We'll take a look at Matthew chapter 20, verses 17 through 34. You're listening to His Time on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news for over 90 years.